Susan, here we are. The people have spoken. Back for season two of APG's Hidden History.
We have gotten a lot of interest from people demanding, where is season two?
I'm telling you, they're knocking down the door.
And we decided to heed the people's call, much as the army did 250 years ago.
There you go with that 250 plug. I like it. I like it.
That's right. This year, 2025, the Army is celebrating its 250th birthday. So as part of that celebration, we decided to bring back APG's Hidden History and talk about our very important role in America's Revolution.
And what was Aberdeen Proving Ground's role during the American Revolution?
Well, Sean, absolutely nothing. You have to remember that APG didn't exist until 1917.
Well, I'm sure maybe, you know, Washington could have like been fishing on the gunpowder or something like that at this point, right?
Right. Well, of course, this region of Maryland, not much was happening during the Revolutionary War. It was an agrarian society. There were certainly people who lived here, and there were a few major roads running north-south. Probably a lot of people like George Washington would have
slept here. There's that famous sign, you know, that's probably on a lot of old colonial homes.
Right. But or traveled up the road, which is now Route 7, which mm-hmm. was the King's Highway and then got renamed because that would have been the main route up to from Virginia through Maryland up to Philadelphia.
Is there anything on the proving ground that dates to the Revolution or predates to the Revolution that's still standing or still exists?
Yes, we have one property. So one lonely property dates from the pre-revolutionary time frame that is still standing here within the boundaries of Aberdeen Proving Ground.
Now, is this Aberdeen North or South?
This is Aberdeen South. So the Edgewood area of APG is home to what is called the Presbury House, also called Quiet Lodge.
Oh, okay, that's ringing a bell.
So the Presbury House, we believe, dates to about 1740, so well before the Revolution.
1740?
1740.
It's still standing?
It's still standing.
You're telling me all the bombs and all the shaking and all the movement on the earth down at Edgewood, and this house is still standing.
This house is there. It's been pretty well cared for by the Army since we took it over in 1917. But it is a very well-built house, exceptional for the time that it was built. There would have been other structures on the area of Edgewood and Aberdeen Proving Ground that were in existence at the same time. One notable example is the 1742 Maxwell Day House. Unfortunately—
Is that on Maxwell Point?
It was around that area, I'm not sure. But unfortunately, the Army used it to test its flamethrower in 1942, and the whole thing was burned to the ground.
Wow, yikes.
But that was a frame building. And
okay. Now, the building that exists today, I'm assuming it's probably brick or stone or—
Yes, so the Presbury House is a fairly high-style house for what would have been an agricultural landscape in 1740. There's a couple of reasons why we can date it to the mid-1700s. We have a fair amount of early documentation on the house. It was one of the first properties documented at the Proving Ground, and it's one of only two properties that is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. And that was done all the way back in 1974, so more than 50 years ago.
Now, when it's on the National Register, is it tied to more than just Army's ownership?
Yes. So there's criteria to become a National Register property. What being on the National Register affords a property is protection under the National Historic Preservation Act. But a property doesn't actually have to be listed in order to be protected. It just has to be eligible for the National Register. This property was actually listed. It was done partially in celebration of our last big birthday, which was the United States bicentennial in 1976.
Oh, okay.
So at that time—
I was just a little pup by then.
Well,
I just want you to know.
Me
I was,
too.
I was under the age of 10, let's say.
You were well under the age of 10. You were under the age of five.
Five, okay.
Hey. You know, give yourself some credit.
Go ahead.
Sean.
Okay. So, I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to get a big head about it.
So this property, the Presbury House, it was built on a piece of land that had been surveyed back in the 1690s.
So wow, it was 1690s.
Yeah, and it was surveyed as a tract of land called Elk Neck. And it was the property of a family called Collett or Collett, C-O-L-L-E-T-T. And then it came to the Presburys through the wife side of the family. So Martha Goldsmith married James Presbury.
James Presbury was High Sheriff of Baltimore County at the time.
Right.
I say Baltimore County because Edgewood sits in Harford County today.
Right. So Harford County wasn't created until 1774. Prior to that, it was all part of one large county, which was Baltimore County, which we talked about last season, if you remember a little
bit. Did we? It's so long ago.
Old Baltimore and how.
Oh, okay. You know, it's coming back to me.
Yeah, okay. So the Goldsmiths were relatives of the Colletts, and it came through Martha's father to her. And they had the property resurveyed in 1719 under the same name, Elk Neck. And at that time, it was about 410 acres. So even though they inherited the property about 1719, and some documents have dated the building to 1720, there's a lot of reasons why it's probably not 1720. It's more likely that their son, George Presbury, built the house in about the 1740 time frame. And there's a couple of clues that this is a mid-18th century house.
Mm-hmm.
The first is that it is a center hall pattern house, meaning it has two rooms with a center passage. So it's room, passage, room,
mm-hmm.
The stairways in the center passage.
And not a very large home.
No, either. It's two stories tall. So basically four rooms and a hallway on both floors. And that is a style that was really just starting to come into fashion in about 1720, 1730, but it tended to be more the style of cities, mm-hmm. now small cities like Williamsburg and things like that. To have it become the style of a rural property means it's probably a little bit later. Somebody's not going to adopt that style for their rural property early in the development of that style. It's going to happen a little bit later. The second case is that it is built of brick in a style called glazed header Flemish bond.
Now, I'm familiar with Flemish bond.
Right.
And that is basically, if you're looking at the brick and it's the short end, if you're looking down the brick, that's the header.
Right.
And then you have the stretcher, which is if you turn the brick to its side,
right,
it stretches. So, but you were saying the glazed header.
There were styles and building practices that came into fashion and fell out of fashion. Early 1700s to the mid 1700s, the Flemish bond became a popular building style in the colonies. So it alternates header and stretcher, header and stretcher. It makes a very nice decorative pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And right about 1740 was like the peak of the fashion to have a Flemish bond with glazed headers.
Okay.
This was really more an American fashion or mm-hmm. a colonial fashion rather than an English fashion because there were different techniques used for making bricks in the colonies versus making bricks in England,
mm-hmm.
which clears up another kind of fallacy regarding this building.
Would you say mystery?
No, I wouldn't call it a mystery, but just...
I'm calling it a mystery.
But some early documentation claims that the bricks would have been used as ballast on ships.
No, I don't believe that.
I don't believe it either because brick making was a very early, one of the first industrial industries in the colonies because it mostly used unskilled labor and it was pretty easy to do. All you needed was brick clay. There's plenty of clay in this area. You needed one guy who knew what he was mm-hmm. doing
and then a
bunch of unskilled labor to make the bricks.
Yeah.
One of the things that was different in making bricks in the colonies versus England is that England had switched to using coal to fire the bricks.
Okay.
In the U.S., they were using hardwood because we had lots of hardwood mm-hmm. around. And it's actually the combustion of the hardwood with the brick, which would create potash, which would react with the clay of the brick, and those bricks closest to the heat source would develop this vitrification of the potash, the salts, and the bricks. And it's almost like it's glazed with a pottery glaze. It's not done on purpose, but it's just a natural chemical reaction. And it creates sort of a dark gray-blue shiny surface on the ends of these bricks. And it is used decoratively on the front of the Presbury House, which means somebody spent a lot of time and a lot of effort, a lot of money to build such a well-constructed building.
You really know your bricks. Let me tell you that. Next time I do a patio, I'm calling you. You know, Susan, we got to go see this place. Let's just get in the car now. Let's just drive down there and take a look at it.
All right.
Let me grab some equipment back here, and we can just get this done. And
road trip time.
Tell the bosses we'll be back in an hour. Let's get this going. So it's an electric car, so you don't hear it starting. Susan, since we got 20 minutes to kill here, let's do a little plug for the Army's 250.
From its founding in 1775, the U.S. Army has defended freedom. Older than the nation itself, the Army has been the shield of our nation, democracy, and way of life, standing strong through the battlefields of the past and challenges of today. Throughout our 250-year heritage, the courage and dedication of our brave men and women have shaped us into the world's premier fighting force. Inspired by the next generation of soldiers, we remain committed to modernization, lethality, and readiness to face tomorrow's threats. Join us in celebrating the Army's 250th anniversary, a multi-year campaign as we honor the past and embrace the future on installations around the world and throughout local communities across the nation. Together, we commemorate the Army's legacy, forged in the fires of conflict and defined by courage. The U.S. Army, proudly serving for 250 years. Established June 14, 1775. This will defend.
All right, Susan, so now we are down in Edgewood, and I can see why they chose the location that they did, because it sits right kind of like on an incline overlooking the Gunpowder River. So back in its day, without the line of trees, must have been quite a sight.
Right, it's only about 500 yards away from the river, but as you said, it sits on the rise, slopes down to the Gunpowder River, so that would have been the commanding view from the house, and you would see the house if you were sailing up the river.
Yes.
It would be prominent there.
And one thing we have to mention, that we are on the residential side, and so we are actually viewing the rear of the home.
Right. So at the time, the main focus of the house would have been oriented towards the river, because that would have been the main access point to get to the house. There probably was an overland route, but that was probably not the main way that people would approach.
And one thing that's clearly obvious that we didn't mention at all is that there is a two-story addition to the east wing of the home.
Right, and that was added by the Army in the early 1920s when they started using this property as officers' housing. It's not a very attractive addition.
You can just say it's ugly. It is ugly. It's not attractive at all, not for the brick work that was done on the home.
So it's also a two-story structure. It's probably about 20 feet square, two stories high, but that portion is where all the modern amenities are for the house.
Yes.
So they've added a kitchen, they've added bathrooms in
exactly,
that part.
Because that's what happens to a lot of homes from this period, is that they did not have a kitchen within the house. Usually it was outside the home because they were worried about fires. And that's another thing that strikes me, is that you can tell that this house has been repaired or has suffered some type of catastrophic damage.
Right, so in the William B. Marie's historical summary from about 1958, he's reflecting on a visit that he paid to this property. He called it Quiet Lodge Farm in 1913. And in that history, he's talking to the descendants of the Raphaels,
who eventually bought this property in right around the turn of the 19th century. And evidently there was a fairly catastrophic fire that took place.
Okay.
He just said years before.
Yeah.
He's mentioning that there is no interior woodwork or paneling or anything that dates it from the 1740s. And you can see that in the brickwork on this backside, the sills of the second story windows, the bonding pattern changes from Flemish bond to a common bond.
Yes.
And the brick is a slightly different color. You can see that.
In some areas, it's very apparent that the brick is totally looks like a newer brick.
In this historic photo we saw that was taken from before they began the restoration, or the army did its reconstruction in the 1920s, that from about the level of the second story windowsills, where that brickwork is different, it's a different bonding pattern. In that historic photo, the mortar is much thicker. It's not very well done. So that was very obvious in those photographs. Since then, the Army has reworked the brickwork and done some restoration, so it looks more cohesive
overall. Because I was ready to
say,
it does look nice with the pointing between the bricks.
Right.
Which is when they put in the mortar, then they go back and they strike it with the point and puts that nice edge to the mortar.
I agree.
And we have to say that this is not a large home. This is only 20 by 40?
Right.
Okay, well, let's take a closer look. So we're approaching the rear of the home.
The windows are arched on the first floor level. You can tell they're replacement windows because it looks like there was some infill brick that filled in what would have been an arch underneath. This is obviously the less decorative side because it's just plain bricks. They're not, the headers aren't glazed. They're consistently bricks across the facade.
Mm-hmm. So let's walk around to the west side of the property. And you can see there must have been some addition to the chimney.
Right. The original structure, you can see the original chimney is still there. There is currently a secondary chimney that has been built that extrudes from the surface of the wall.
Yeah.
And that is obviously newer because it's a different bond.
Mm-hmm.
It's held on with metal strap. But this is the end that has windows letting light into what would have been the parlor and the bedroom and the attic. Although there is a closed window, and that was documented pretty early. There is evidence that there was another window on the second floor that has since been bricked up.
But they did take the time to do the Flemish bond, it appears. What do you call it again when the brick lifts from the surface?
It's called spalling. It's when a different type of mortar is used that's maybe too hard for the brick. Because historic mortars were made from natural materials. Often in this area, it was burned oyster shells to use as the lime.
Okay.
They would move and expand with the expansion of the brick.
Mm-hmm.
Later, mortar repairs were often done with Portland cement, which is much stronger.
Okay.
So instead of the brick and the mortar moving together with freeze-thaw cycles, the brick moves, but the mortar doesn't because it's too hard. So the surfaces of the brick tend to pop off if any water gets in behind them with the freeze thaw or the salts. All right, so we're moving on to the front elevation, which faces the Gunpowder River.
You can definitely see the difference with, hear that?
That's the sounds
of freedom right there. Yes, you definitely see the difference with the glazed headers, as you had mentioned before.
Right, so this was obviously the ceremonial front of the house because they are using those expensive special bricks to create this pattern with the glazed headers. And it's still evident today. It probably would have been shinier and fancier at the time. It's probably worn a little over the last almost 300 years.
Would that just be on the headers though?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just on the headers. But you can still see that they tend to be a sort of gray, dark gray color. Mm-hmm. But you can see the bricks around the door are very decorative, different than the back entrance.
Mm-hmm.
They're curved. They've been molded so that they frame the door.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that there is an OG brick water table, which means there's a curve right at the top of the foundation.
To keep the water away from the foundation.
They try to bounce some of the water off, but it's also a decorative
function. So it's about 2 feet from the ground.
Right. So that's probably where
the curves out. Yes.
Where the basement level is.
Uh-huh.
But that's indicated by the curved bricks that they've used to designate the water table from the rest of the building. And again, the water table is not glazed header. Mm-hmm. So this would be solid. And then you get into the main facade and you get the dark gray bricks, contrasting with the regular brick colored bricks.
And do you think there would have been some type of porch? Because today there exists a small screened in porch that covers pretty much
the width of the house. They probably wouldn't have a porch, I don't think. There would have been other buildings. There would have been other areas of the yard and the land surrounding it that would have been used by the people living here.
Okay.
Because it's such a small, comparatively sized house. Mm-hmm. The kitchen would have been separate. There would have been outbuildings. There would have been people doing activities out in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
I would think, given the fact that the doorway is so well defined and the arches in the windows, that they probably wouldn't have had it covered with a porch.
Okay. And I'm noticing some, are these inscriptions in the brick?
Yeah, so that was also documented by William Marie in 1913. There are names of Presbury family members inscribed in the bricks very close to the bottom.
Oh, difficult to read, but you're talking about nice handwriting, like script, like not chiseled.
Right.
Like you would with, like, say, a pocket knife or something like that. But someone took the time to really inscribe these bricks, and it seems like it starts at the bottom and works its way up.
It's a series of less than 10 family names and their birth dates, various Presburys and George Goldsmith Presburys and other assorted names. And they have their birth dates, and they range from about 1713 to 1759.
Okay.
So that makes me believe that they were done during the time the family lived here, not necessarily beforehand, because they wouldn't have known the people who were born, dates. Although there is later graffiti of other people's
names.
I'm
seeing that because it looks like over the years that maybe some soldiers kind of, this whole back wall has, if you take the time to look, you can see little inscriptions people carving their names into the brick.
Right. They're very hard to read at this point.
Yeah.
Even in 1913, he couldn't make out all the names very well.
Okay.
But even at that time, they were probably starting to wear away over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just an interesting little piece of history attached to this house that it's rightfully named the Presbury House. They have put their name on this building for all time.
So while we're down here, is there any other structure that dates to this period?
Well, there aren't any structures that date to this period, but there is a property that is associated with this property. So the Presburys, specifically a Joseph Presbury, was very well known in the early Methodist movement in Maryland. And it's documented in the journals of Francis Asbury that he came and visited Joseph Presbury and stayed at this house during his travels. He shows up a bunch of times between 1772 and 1777. And we know that in 1773, Joseph Presbury deeded an acre of land, it's about a mile from here, still within the boundaries of the Edgewood area of APG. Mm-hmm. He deeded an acre of land to the trustees at the Methodist Church. The documentation at the time says the acre of land with the meeting house that has lately been constructed there.
Okay.
Right. So if we visit the site, we will find there what is currently called the Gunpowder Meeting House.
Let's do it.
The National Museum of the United States Army shares plans for their latest special exhibit, opening June 2025. Experience the sights and sounds of the American Revolution through the personal stories of the men and women who fought it. Curated specifically to commemorate the 250th anniversary of the Army's birthday in 2025 and of the American Revolution in 2026, this 5,000 square foot exhibition shares soldier stories and more than 280 artifacts from the first colonies, England, France, and Canada. Learn more and explore the special exhibition gallery at usarmymuseum.org.
I don't know what you think, but that looks like a new roof. Look at the copper.
Yep, they just finished putting on a new roof and new copper gutters.
Wow.
Looking all spick and span.
Yes, yes it does. That's like brand spanking new.
Yeah, so it's a one-room structure about 26 feet by 35 feet. It's a single room, but it's very interesting that there are three entrances into the building.
Or three exits.
Or three exits. So there's one on the gable end, flanked by two windows with a window up above. And then on top of that is where a date stone would have been, but it's sort of a half circle up at the top. That's been lost to time, unfortunately. So we can't exactly date this building.
Do you know why it would have been removed?
It could have been that a congregation took it with them.
Okay.
Although you'd think there'd be some documentation of that over time. But the sign says this building was erected in 1773. We know that's not true. There was probably...
Do we?
Based on the construction of this building, it is not a 1773 building. It looks more likely it's an 1820, 1830 building.
Okay. And why do you say that?
Well, it has some Greek Revival kind of design features.
Which is what?
The flat arches, the fact the entrance is this sort of pediment front. It's just like the, you know, which is sort of a Greek Revival where you come in. But it's a very simple building. It wasn't meant to be fancy because it was a meeting house. It's built in a 5-1 common bond brick. We know there was a structure here probably in the 1770s. Mm-hmm. This is probably a replacement.
Ooh, it's
very muddy here. Yeah. A lot of Edgewood is very close to the water table. So you can kind of see that that may have been a concern at some point because there's metal tie rods holding the two sides of the building
together. Oh, I see
that. Together.
At each corner of the building protrudes, what is that, iron?
Yeah, it looks like an iron bolt.
There's probably a tie rod inside
that goes across that basically is keeping the structure together. And it could just be we've seen earlier photographs where that is not there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was probably added to help stabilize the property because there might have been some settlement because there's a rail line not that far away. So maybe the vibrations, which wouldn't have been originally affecting this, contributed. It could be that the ground became wetter.
You enter from the south.
But then there's also an entry on both the east and west ends as well.
Uh-huh.
As far as we can tell, that was the original layout of this property. It could have been that there was a men's side and a women's side, which was not uncommon in religious structures.
But a lot of meeting houses usually have like dual front doors.
Right.
And that was for the women to enter through one and the men to enter through the other.
So when you look inside, it has this weird, very sloped balcony that's right above the entrance from the south.
Mm-hmm.
We know that was probably an original feature, although the balcony that's in there now was reconstructed when the Army did an extensive rehabilitation of this building in the early 1980s. Some historians visited around 1970, and they documented the outline of this stairway and balcony was in the plaster work.
Okay.
So it had been removed at some point.
Yeah, so there was a ghost image basically left from the
Right. And there was also the image of where the pulpit would have been on the north end of the building between the windows. We do know that the Army used it kind of as a warehouse to store ordnance after they took control of it in 1917. But the property, I think, wasn't very well cared for from the end of the 1800s until the Army took it over. It had fallen out of use by the various congregations who had used it. So it was it was in pretty poor shape when it was documented in the 1970s, which is why the Army did such an extensive rehabilitation of it, which at which point, you know, they made, because what was documented in the 70s was a composite roof. As you can see now, we've gone back to what would have been historic. It's wooden shingles, it's a copper gutter, nicely complements the corbel brick at the top. They've done some new flashing around the chimney to keep the water from infiltrating
all
through
in copper.
The chimney, all in copper. So at the time of the visit in 1970, even then, they said there was no evidence of a cemetery around here.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean there's not somewhere, because as you can see, you know, it's kind of wooded.
Yeah.
Around it. There's warehouses.
Well, seriously, isn't Edgewood really a cemetery? But no, I'm just kidding.
Well, there's warehouses to the east as you head like more into central, the main road into Edgewood. This is kind of a quiet area
mm-hmm.
of Edgewood. In comparison to the Presbury House, the brickwork is consistent throughout the whole building, which,
yes.
you know, unlike there where it was obvious that there had probably been some repairs done over time, probably due to that fire,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's no information that this was ever burned or anything. So
no.
the brickwork is, you know, the windows are where the windows were. The brickwork lines up with the windows, with the doors. So those are the original openings for mm-hmm. the building all around.
And how long did it remain a meeting house?
It was used for religious purposes up until 1886. After that, it, as I said, it kind of fell out of use, whether the congregation got too big for it or it was too far away from where people wanted to come. And so it just sort of became abandoned until the Army bought the whole property in 1917.
Well, let's see if we can go inside.
Okay.
And what we're standing in is literally just one big open
it's
room.
One big
There's
room.
No walls. There yeah. is a staircase to the
There's
left
a loft.
With a loft where
right.
you know, for more of a congregation. Well, I see the corners are at 90 degree angle, yet when you get up to the ceiling, it's curved.
It's probably just because, I mean.
Or is that
it's
contemporary?
It's just the angle. That's probably the angle of the joist.
Uh-huh.
Right there, so they just but
it's still not a sharp edge.
I'm
kind of surprised to see that.
So there's probably not really like attic space per se in
mm-hmm.
here. This probably goes up
yeah.
very close to the roof.
Yeah, but it's a nice curve.
Right, so they just built it to have, you know,
sure.
so your voice
echoes.
I'm glad we got to see the inside of the building. It's always a little bit of a different experience when you get to see the inside of something as well as the exterior. But now that we're coming to the end of our tour of the Gunpowder Meeting House, are there any other questions you have, Sean?
Yes. When will we start booking for weddings and bar mitzvahs?
I don't know. You'd have to figure out where to put the food trucks and the, and you know.
Because this would make a lovely venue for that.
Well, how long do you think it will take us to get back up to the studio from here, Sean?
Well, I can make it happen just like that.
Ah, Susan, here we are back in a warm studio. Thank goodness, it was a little windy out there. All right, so what are some takeaways that you have seeing it firsthand and up close?
It wasn't always in the hand of just one family. The Presburys sold it in 1799 to a Frenchman called Etienne Raphael.
Can you say that again for me?
Etienne Raphael.
Oui, oui.
and it was really the Raphaels who named the building Quiet Lodge.
Okay, that was going to be my next question for you, is where that name came.
Right. That wasn't used by the Presburys at all. The first reference to it is in the will of Etienne Raphael in 1811 when he names it Quiet Lodge. But then it continued to sort of be associated with the property, including when the Cadwaladers bought most of the peninsula down
mm-hmm.
there. They owned the vast majority of what would become Edgewood. They bought it in 1854. They owned it up through 1917 when the Army
came.
Right. The whole the property, when it was in use in the 1740s, would have been the house and then a lot of associated structures, probably a kitchen, agricultural buildings. In fact,
game room.
Right. Whatever.
Okay.
But the Presbury House is one of the few properties that has been determined that the archaeological relics would contribute to the eligibility of the property for the National Register, because it talks about the agricultural practices. For example, they found very defined refuse pits, which would have been associated with like a big agriculture, like somebody was very deliberately throwing things away, including ceramics and kitchen debris and things like that in specific locations, which would have been part of a larger managed landscape.
Okay, excellent. My issue, Susan, is I'm for some reason, every time I hear Presbury, I'm always thinking of like a church.
Because the Presbyteries were instrumental in bringing the American Methodism movement into Harford County.
Okay.
Joseph Presbury was a follower of the Methodism movement, and he hosted some fairly big names in Methodism at the time, including Francis Asbury.
Know him.
Yes.
Heard that name before.
And Reverend John Littlejohn. So they were some
Wait. John Littlejohn? Is that real? Are you making that up?
I believe that's his name.
His name was John Littlejohn.
Yes.
That, if I, too much.
That's right.
John Littlejohn, you're kidding me.
I'm pretty sure that was his name. Yeah, I wrote it down here.
I believe you. Okay. I believe you. Trust me.
So anyway, the American Methodism movement really got its start in Maryland. There was a man of the name Robert Strawbridge, who was Irish.
Okay, I'm familiar with
yes. him. Yes. He's the one who brought the Methodist movement, which was started by the Wesleys in England, mm-hmm. over to America. But at the same time that the Presbyteries were involved, the Methodists were meeting in Baltimore and really setting up what would become the Methodist Church. And so it was in the 1773 conference around the same time that the Presbyteries deeded an acre of land to the Methodist trustees for the building of a meeting house.
Well, that's been exciting, Susan. I'm glad I got to spend the day with you. Got a little road trip in there.
That's right. And I feel like I went back to my roots, Sean, and the fact that we went back to Edgewood, where I spent the first 12 years of my Army career. And I got to bring out a little bit of my architectural history degree, which I don't get to use during the normal course of my job.
Well, I think you have me to thank for that.
Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome. Susan, this has been wonderful. And again, to our audience, these buildings are still standing. And I say this with peace and love. Please, please do not come onto the proving ground looking to explore these structures. They are locked. They are not open to the public. Is there anything else on your radar, Susan?
Well, since we can't visit our Revolutionary Era properties, I would recommend that people check out U.S. Army Center of Military History's website. They have a calendar of events celebrating the Army's 250th birthday, Revolutionary War events. You can look at it at history.army.mil/RevWar250.
That sounds wonderful. And until next time, thank you for joining us.